All right, guys, we're in lesson 23. Lesson 23. And after this, we have one more month of lessons, and we'll get through 1 Corinthians. And, of course, after that, we'll go into the second letter. Now, today, we're going to finish up the discussion about spiritual gifts. So as we begin, let me ask you some questions. He seems to be focused on spiritual gifts, but is he focused on all the gifts in this discussion so far? He says there's lots of different gifts, but has he mentioned lots of different gifts? What gifts has he mentioned? Prophecy and tongues. They're the only two that he's talked about, okay? Now, so I want you to realize, now, why is he focused on those two gifts? Is because they were having a problem in their congregation with how they were conducting themselves and, quote, exercising their gifts. And so he wanted to address this, okay? So, all right, so, and I told you before that when we talk about tongues, there's the tongues that we see in Acts chapter 2 when the Holy Spirit came upon them and they spoke in other languages. However, when we come to Acts, 1 Corinthians chapter 14, it's not the same thing. This seems to be what they might refer to as ecstatic tongues. And how we know that is because he makes reference to the fact that if an unbeliever comes in and they're exercising this gift, he will think that they are mad. Okay, so my question to you, is he forbidding tongues? Is he saying, no, this is not a gift? No, he's not. What is he doing, though?
Telling us when it's correct time to use it for practice.
Okay, so he's kind of setting some guidelines, is what you're saying, Tim, as far as when the use is proper and when it's not, okay? So, and what is the overall issue with gifts? Who are supposed to benefit from the gifts? Yes, John, others. Spiritual gifts are not given for your benefit, meaning singular. It's for you, plural, all of you, okay? It's supposed to be gifts that are given to encourage each and every one of us, okay? And we're supposed to learn from them. And that's been his whole argument with tongues. Who benefits from tongues? Anyone? Yeah, what's that? The person who speaks in tongues. Yeah, the person who speaks in tongues benefits. Does anybody else benefit from it? Unless there is a what? An interpreter, right? Somebody who can explain what's going on, right? So today, when we come to the latter part here, he's going to talk about the exercise of these gifts. So he's going to give some guidelines for using these gifts in a congregational gathering, a worship service, so to speak, okay? So I want you to notice with me, we're going to look at verses 26 through 33 of 1 Corinthians 14. Here's what Paul writes. What then, brothers, when you come together, each one has a hymn, a lesson, a revelation, a tongue, or an interpretation. Let all things be done for building up. If any speaks in a tongue, let there be only two, or at the most three, and each in turn, and let someone interpret. But if there is no one to interpret, let each of them keep silent in the church and speak to himself and to God. Let two or three prophets speak, and let the others weigh what is said. If a revelation is made to another sitting there, let the first be silent. For you can all prophesy one by one, so that all may learn and all be encouraged. And the spirits of the prophets are subject to the prophets. For God is not the God of confusion, but of peace, as in all the churches of the saints. All right, now, let's take a look at this, all right? So first thing I want you to notice here is he's going to talk about the freedom of participation. Who can participate in a service? Okay? So what he's saying here, first of all, is that each one has something to offer for the worship of the church. So everyone has something to offer for the worship of the church. Now, what are your thoughts when he's saying that? Are you like, I never thought of that, or I don't know if that's true? What are you thinking? I see some eyeballs moving in a way that they're like processing it or trying to comprehend it. What do you think about what he's saying here? Each one has something to offer in worship. All right, John? All right, yeah, he does. If you have a revelation, you have something to share, a prophecy, yep, okay. But I'm talking about, let's take us. According to Paul, each one here has something to offer when the church comes together to worship. Now, what do you think that means? Okay, so because you might say, well, I'm not the guy who's sharing a message, or I'm not the guy who's praying. How can I participate? I just come and I observe. No. If you are singing, you are involved in what? The worship together. It's basically people coming together. And when we're talking about, we're not just talking about a service. So don't look at it in terms of a service. All right, it's a symbol of all getting together and unity as one, but I want you to think, we're talking about gifts being used. So when the congregation comes together, don't think worship service, because it's more than a worship service. Everybody has something to offer. What were you going to say, Tim?
I think it comes down to, like, when we have Sunday school classes, someone is teaching the kids, someone's that's their gift.
Okay, so you're saying they're offering as far as helping and as far as service in the church. Okay, so they're doing a service, okay. But here's another one. You say, well, I don't teach. You know, and my singing's terrible, so I'm quiet. You know? What do I do? I mean, how do I offer? Yeah, but think about it. We're talking about gifts being used. Everyone has something to offer when the congregation comes together, when the church comes together. Yeah, some of us might be what? Encouragers. Do you understand? Some of us might be like, if someone says, hey, you know, I'm not really doing it. I've got a terrible week coming up. And someone says, well, let me pray for you right now. Someone might be an intercessor. Someone might be, hey, hang in there. Someone might just put an arm around someone and say, you're going to be okay. See, everyone has something to offer. This is what I want you to understand. That's why I'd like to say it's more than a service here. Because each one of us has something to give to each other to build each other up. Because let's be honest, sometimes when you come and you're in the midst of it, the message means nothing, the music means nothing. Because what's going on in your mind right now, you're like, that's so far away from you. But what may mean something to you is someone coming and shaking your hand. Hey, how are you doing today? You know what I'm saying? And then you can say, I'm not doing good. And the other person can say, hey, you're not alone. You know what I'm saying? I'll pray for you. Everyone has something to offer. Okay? Everyone has something to offer. That's the point he's trying to make here. So when we come, each one has something to offer for the worship of the church. You say, now, encouragement, is that worship of the church? Everything we do is to do what? Bring glory to God. So every action of yours is a form of worship. Are you bringing glory to God with how you are? Maybe we've not thought about that. But doesn't he tell us that? Do all to the glory of God? You know what I'm saying? So everything we do is a form of worship. Okay? Now, some of you might need to process that one for a while, okay? So all must be done for the edification of the church as the whole. So what I'm doing should be for who? Everyone else, right? It's for the benefit of everyone else. It's coming to church not with a me focus, but with an others focus. It's not coming to church with what can I get out of this today, but it's basically, Lord, how can I be used today to help others as they are ministering to me? Because somebody might say, well, you know, I can be there and come and I can say I'm doing it for others, but who's going to do it for me? Well, if we all have the same attitude that we're going to do it for each other, then as you're doing for others, somebody's going to be doing for you. Do you know what I'm saying? It should be that way. But that's why we have to guard our hearts against selfishness. So, he's not forbidding the use of tongues in church, but he's putting some parameters on it, okay? So he says he limits the number who can speak in tongues in an assembly. That's interesting, isn't it? So when you read the passage, how many does he say it's okay to speak in tongues? Two or three, yes. Okay. And they can just speak in tongues, right? Is that the only instructions he gives? No. Paul states that there must be an interpreter for those who speak in tongues. Why? Because his thought is, remember, his thought is, the exercise of gifts is for the benefit of who? Everyone else. Okay? And so if you're going to exercise that gift, we're not going to keep you from exercising that gift, but there needs to be someone who can interpret what you're saying. Okay? Somebody who's been gifted to interpret. And if there is no interpreter, those who speak in tongues must remain what? Silent when the church gathers. They need to be quiet. Okay? Now, do you think that's harsh?
I don't think it's harsh, but it makes me wonder how they know for an interpreter. I'm assuming, and this may be my wrong thought on tongues, but tongues would be something that wasn't in their specific language. How would they know whether there was an interpreter there that could speak that language? Come on, was an interpreter a gift from God as well, so that this guy's an interpreter? You know, like,
yes. And I think he said earlier when he listed the gifts in 12, he talked about those who had the interpretation of a tongue. So it was somebody who was gifted and who would be known. Okay, and it has to be somebody that the congregation knows, okay? And if there's not somebody there to interpret, then be quiet, okay, at the congregation. Now, he's not telling them not to use the gift. Don't take it that way. He's not forbidding the use of the gift. He's just saying, be silent in the congregational gathering. Okay? Did you have a...
Yeah, like the gift of tongues. Is that something that's the same, like an interpreter would be able to interpret anybody speaking in tongues? Or is that something that you wrote down where you interpret it yourself?
Okay, so notice what he says here in the passage, Danny. He says, if no more than two or three, each in turn, and let someone interpret. So each one is to speak in tongues, and then they're to have someone who is to interpret what the other three are saying.
But couldn't it be wrote down in language so you can physically see what you're saying? You know, learn the language, or is it something?
So you obviously had not very much experience with people using ecstatic tongues, okay? Typically, you can't write that down. Paul's already said it's in a language that nobody understands. Nobody understands it. And if you talk to people who speak in tongues, they'll tell you they don't even know what they're saying.
So the interpreter would understand that that's something he wrote down.
He could write down what the interpretation is, but he can't write down what they're saying as far as the actual.
It's not the same, like the word for church in tongues. It's not the same every time it's spoken.
You're asking something I have no basis for even letting you know. Okay. Okay, we're not talking like somebody speaking in German, okay? That's Kirche in German, okay? We're not talking about somebody speaking in French or in... Yeah, Danny, remember the description. Go by what Paul's describing here. Paul's saying if an unbeliever walks into a congregation, walks into a gathering, and people are speaking in tongues, he will look at everyone there as saying, thinking that they are mad. Because nobody understands anything that's being said. Do you understand? The guy sitting at the door doesn't understand. That's the whole point. If someone were speaking in French, but Danny, here's the thing. I personally have been around a lot of different places. I have been with some who do speak in tongues, okay? And then I have been in a lot of places where tongues is not spoken, okay? I've been with people who speak in tongues, and I have never heard any of them say that they could write down what they just said. No, this is not something you learn. It has to be a gift, which is what Bruce was saying, is it's a gift. It has to be a spiritual gift that God gives to somebody to understand what's being said. Okay?
I don't think tongues is a language, per se, like within the saying. It's not a certain language. One person may say whatever it is that God's trying to say.
Yes.
And another person may say the same thing in another way. It's not going to be the same.
Yes. Now, I would say it's not a language, but the fact is people who speak in tongues say it's a heavenly language, okay? So my point is, you got to have somebody interpret it. And these folks, you have to understand, you're talking about an age in a church when most people were illiterate anyhow. Most of what's happening is oral as far as communication. Not in Greek Corinth. If you spoke in English, let's say we transported ourselves back 2,000 years.
In one church where the pastor started doing that, but no one answered him, so he didn't do it the rest of the time. That's scary.
Okay, yeah, whatever there's... Okay, I personally am not going to comment on how other churches do what they do, okay?
I ain't going to mention the church, but it kind of freaks
me out. Okay, well, I understand. What I'm trying to tell you is, I think a lot of things, because remember, you weren't here last week. So last week we talked about there are two extremes. There are people who say, oh, you got to have this, you should do it for and this shows your salvation. And there's the other extreme where this doesn't exist anymore. That gift's over, okay? What I'm telling you is from what Paul says here, he doesn't try to disprove tongues. He's trying to... No, I'm not saying you are. He's trying to give guidelines for its use. And when you understand what he's saying, it really isn't an issue. Do you know what I'm saying? What you do, he's basically, in fact, that's, I think that's the next point he's going to make here. Without an interpreter for the assembly, tongues must remain personal. Okay? That Paul's saying that. That's not something you just do in the assembly unless there's an interpreter. Fine. You speak in tongues? Great. That's personal. That's between you and the Lord in your prayer closet. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because you're the only one who's benefiting from it. Now, do you understand what's being said? No. Do you know what I'm saying? So, but the person gets some sort of benefit from it. I don't understand. But if you talk to people who speak in tongues, they say they get great benefit from it. Do you understand what I'm saying? But I'm not sure about that, and I'm not...
So when the two people that speak tongues, when they're together, they can just carry on the conversation?
I don't know that that's not how it's done. What you're describing is not what typically happens. Okay, all right, so let's say we have Bubba here, okay? Bubba feels he has the gift. He just gets up and speaks. Nobody understands anything he says. But he feels good. You know what I'm saying? He would say, oh, that was an awesome experience. Sits back down. Everybody else is kind of looking like, what? What just happened? What's going on there? Okay? This is what Paul's trying to address. He's saying that is not proper in a congregation because it doesn't build up the congregation. Bubba can share, but he needs a Cindy to interpret. Did you understand? Or a Clyde, somebody to interpret. That way everybody benefits. Do you understand? That's the issue with Paul. He's not even thinking writing it down. He's thinking that, because they would say, because he mentioned it earlier, they would say it's the tongues of angels. Okay, wonderful. Do you know what I'm saying? But the point is, if it's not a benefit to anyone else, we're not going to do this. And if we're going to do it, there has to be somebody who's gifted in interpretation. Otherwise, guess what? Be quiet. Be quiet. And really, someone will say, well, that's not fair. I should be able to exercise my gift. Hold on. What's the purpose of gifts? For others. Now, if you're expressing the attitude, I should just be able to express my gift, even though nobody else understands, what is that, folks? Selfishness, right? That's not others' focus, and that's not the attitude that Paul wants us to get here. Do you understand? So it's not that he's saying don't speak in tongues. He's saying there's a place for tongues with certain things happening. Otherwise, what? Just do your tongues at home in your personal time with. In fact, I like the way Paul says it. All right, look at what Paul says here. All right, look with me at verse 28. He says, but if there's no one to interpret, let each one keep silent in the church and speak to himself and God. So it's for your time with the Lord. Just don't do it in the congregation if there's nobody to interpret. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Okay? So he's trying to set some guidelines here. Okay? So those are the guidelines for tongues. Now let's talk about prophecy. Even with prophecy, there were some guidelines. You thought, well, everybody would understand what's being said if there was a prophecy. Well, no, look at what he says here. Paul limits the number of people who can share a prophecy with the assembly. So he's putting a limit on the number of people who can get up and say, I got a word from the Lord. You know? And he's like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Okay. But there's some limits even to that, because he's trying to guard against abuse. Because could that gift be abused in a church? How could that gift be abused in a church? Saying stuff to say it or push their agenda. Okay? You know, somebody could push their agenda. So like say someone says, I got a word from the Lord. The Lord told me to tell George quit wearing yellow. It's from the Lord. Why? Because I don't like George in yellow. Okay? No, but my point is that, do you see what I'm saying? You could say, well, it's from the Lord. How do you know it's from the Lord? Well, he gives some guidelines here, okay? So that no one person dominates a gathering, they must defer to one another. So even if I'm so sure I got a word from God, I'm going to let others speak before me. That's the attitude that should be there. Not one that's going to, somebody's going to dominate, but he's going to defer to others, okay? So orderly proclamation of the prophecies would benefit all. That's his whole point. We're talking about benefiting all here. It's not about you making your point, okay? Because sometimes do we get to the place where we want to make a point? We want to, quote, say it like it is? And even sometimes when we spiritualize it, I know the Lord is telling us this. And I just need to tell the people this. You know what I'm saying? So he's trying to guard against that. Well, we've got to defer, okay? Well, he's going to defer. He's going to give some other. Unlike the gift of tongues, the one who prophesies is in control of his actions. All right, so stop. He just gave us an understanding of tongues. A person who speaks in tongues, is he in control? No. And they would say that. People who speak in tongues would say that they're not in control. It's the Spirit has come upon them, okay? But here he's saying the one who prophesies, the one who brings the word that God has given him to share, he's in control of his actions, okay? He's in control. So God by nature is not the author of confusion in churches. So this is the point, this is the overall point. Even with the exercise, that God's not just saying, go do whatever you want to do, folks, and just whatever happens, happens. God's not the author of confusion. Okay? He's not the author of confusion. So, all right. Any thoughts there so far? Yeah, Mike. Yes, he mentions that in he said in 1 Corinthians 13, if I could speak in the tongues of angels. Yes.
So,
I think, to be honest with you, when we get to heaven, we're going to have a new body and a new understanding. And I think, I don't think they speak English in heaven, okay? I think we're going to understand a new language and we'll understand angels and so forth. I don't know what you want to call that. I've heard some pastors in the past say, we're going to speak in Hebrew, maybe, okay? I don't know. That kind of would seem odd to me, because what would Adam didn't speak Hebrew? Do you know what I'm saying? Enoch didn't speak Hebrew. Yes, they did, yes. And it wasn't Hebrew. Do you know what I'm saying? It wasn't Hebrew. So my point is that we're going to all speak a language, okay? I think that's something completely different. It's when he's talking about the tongues of angels, he's talking about people here who are exercising tongues. What language are you? Oh, I'm speaking in the tongues of angels. Did you understand what I'm saying? A heavenly tongue. That's how folks refer to it today, as a heavenly tongue. Okay? But when he mentions it, he talks about, though I speak in the tongues of angels, meaning, you know, I speak tongues more than any of you. His whole point is that he's, again, bringing back with his argument, even if I did this, the whole purpose is, if I don't have love in what I do, and if it isn't for other people, what I'm doing is meaningless. Do you understand? Or you seem more confused.
Well, I just think, like you were saying, once we get to heaven, we're going to be transformed. And of course, our ears are going to hear.
Yes.
Through the mind, more than us talking. I don't know, you know what I'm saying?
I think it's going to be different, and I don't think we're, all I know is that I'm just going to want to be there, and whatever happens to me, I'll understand Jesus talking to me, and he probably isn't going to speak to me in English, you know what I'm saying? But then again, it really won't matter.
I think we'll all be able to interpret whatever language
he speaks. Or we may speak the same, yes, yeah, you know. And at that point, I'll be honest with you, when we get to heaven, you're not going to be focused on what language you're speaking. That's not going to be like, whoa, what am I saying? You know what I'm saying? You know, I think we're just going to be in awe that we're there. Do you understand what I'm saying? So, or worshiping at Jesus' feet. Laura, you had a thought. No. I think it is the same word, glossolalia, okay? I'm just saying that off the top of my head. I would have to go and look at the Greek text, okay? However, I don't think how it's used is specific. So I could say I have a cat, but I could have a Persian cat, Siamese cat, a calico cat. Do you understand what I'm saying? We understand there are different types of cats, but we know they're a cat. So Luke, when he writes Acts, may record that they spoke in tongues, other languages. Here he's using the same word, but in a different sense. How we know the sense of it is the context of the passage. Because in this instance in 1 Corinthians, his reference to tongues here is not speaking in terms of languages that people understand. He's talked about it in the sense of, if you are talking